Breathing my breath. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to another episode of Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. I, as ever, Mr. Roscoe Harold Vacant, I'm joined once again by my dear friend and colleague, Mr. Gil Rokitansky. Gil, how are we today?
Dudes!
Have you been watching a bit of Charles Band, have you?
I haven't, actually, no.
You haven't? No. Uh-huh. You always get confused between Charles Band and Charles Dance. Don't know why.
Is it because they are the same person? No, it's not.
No, I think it's because they've both got Charles in their name is the main issue. That's a stake.
So it was actually Prince Charles Band?
Prince Charles Band, absolutely.
Oh, we should point out to people you've got a wee cold.
I have got a wee cold, you're right. So yeah, this episode is dedicated to His Royal Highness Charles Dance, the creator of the Puppet Master series and Dolly Dearest.
Have you been drinking Junior Benelin by the pint?
Absolutely.
You know, I remember, like, see when you were a kid and you would be ill, and did your mum give you Junior Benelin?
Junior Benelin, no, I don't think so.
Or just, there is like just Benelin, but then there's there's Junior Benelin, which tastes nicer, and I think that I had a wee bit of a habit for it when I was a kid. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that if there was a biopic of me ever made, at some point there'd be
biopic?
Yeah.
Do you mean a biopic? A biopic. I think that means when you get like your arm.
It's when you've got two eyes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's, I think that's.
Oh, it's like a biopic there.
Biopic.
Mr.
A macrobiopic.
Mr. Highfalutin, I've been to New.
Oh, aye. This is gonna come back.
Let's hope this doesn't come back, eh?
Yeah. So, Gil, have you managed to watch any films this week? Has there been much going on in your... This month? Well, absolutely. We've had a bit of a hiatus due to me being a little bit busy.
And pressy.
And pressy? How have you been pressy? How dare you?
Exactly.
How very dare you, sir?
Oh, not Catherine Tate quotes. Please.
How is that a Catherine Tate quote?
Oh, she had that character that used to say, like, how very, very dare you. And that fucking...
Come on, Leonard, we are leaving.
I wouldn't have known the Leonard thing, because I just... Every time I watched...
His name was something like Leonard Minson, wasn't it?
That series just made me want to vomit into my eyes, to the point where I think I did just vomit into my eyes and then never saw any more of it. But it did annoy me because I did used to enjoy putting on a bit of a highfalutin accent, and I kind of had started using the phrase, how very dare you.
There you go. There we go. So your idea was nicked.
No, it wasn't. It was just unoriginal.
I saw on the Manborg page that somebody has drawn a cartoon of Manborg and then written nope above it. Don't know if you saw that, but I had recently made a picture of Dean Ambrose with the Robocop, the Manborg gear on, and Dean Ambrose's famous meme-based catchphrase is nope. So I think I've contributed something to the Manborg mythology, and I'm quite proud of that.
As rightly you should be.
I'm very proud of that. So, Gil, how have things been? Have you been well?
I've been better than you, by the sounds of it.
I sound like I've been run over by a bus.
Yeah. But no, I've been pretty good. Pardon me. Did you hear that?
Did you have a wee sneeze?
No, that was a tiny, tiny burp.
Like, oh dear, that's disgusting.
Like the sort of burp a baby would do.
Well, girl, that's enough. That's enough.
That's enough.
Exactly.
I said that's enough.
Bad girl on your rug.
But yeah, I've been pretty good. I've watched quite a few films actually. It's it's a shame that we are kind of limited to horror because I did really enjoy American Hustle and Wolf of Wall Street and particularly Her, the new Spike Jonze joint.
Sure. Okay. So you were mentioning about that one. What's that like?
It's really good. It's Joaquin Phoenix.
Yep.
And he falls in love with this basically it's a new computer program that comes out that's like an all-in-one helper that basically analyzes everything you've ever done online and it gets an idea of your character and then kind of tries to appeal to you more and is much more helpful than you would expect. And that's the voice of that is Scarlett Johansson.
That's her name. Yep.
So they fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a wee bit of sex.
A bit of the old
not proper
in and out.
Not well, unless he's fucking the headphone socket, I don't think so. Because she does mostly exist on his phone. It's a really nice little film all about, well, what would happen if a computer program was trained to basically just learn from the start.
Sure.
And to try and learn on its own and keep going. It's well worth seeing.
Very cool.
I really, really enjoyed it. And when I had another argument on the IMDb forums about it.
Oh, not another one.
Another one, because somebody had said, well, this film's a bit of a disappointment. It's only made $5.3 million in its opening weekend.
Uh-huh.
At which point I had to point out to the person that its entire budget was $5
million. Uh-huh, sure, yeah, absolutely.
And then if you look at Spike Jonze's other films, then percentage-wise, it was more successful in 3 days than any of them.
Sure.
And
right.
I was feeling like, yes, I am the king. I have won an argument through mathematics. And then the person just came back and went, actually, yeah, that's all really good points. I'm sorry, I was completely wrong. I was just left feeling like, no, you were supposed to argue. I spent upwards of 3 minutes looking up some facts.
Absolutely, man.
It was really annoying. I did also have an awesome two post argument on Facebook yesterday, but I won't mention that.
Yeah, don't bother that's pretty frustrating. That
was pretty fucking frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely, but. Again, we've come back to it. Some people are dicks, and that's the that's the thing.
I got older.
You got older, yeah. It was your birthday, and did any of your friends do anything particularly special for you?
No. Nope.
You shit.
Yeah. You bought me two fantastic presents.
I got you one fantastic present, and then you decided it was your Christmas. And then,
well, yeah, that was because I hadn't seen you.
You didn't. You hadn't received your Christmas presents from me, so you just swapped them out. So that was fine. Yeah. That was all good.
Basically, you were posting my birthday present to me really early.
Exactly.
Without the actual ability to see me before my birthday, anyway. Still having my Christmas present sitting in your house.
Exactly.
So.
I'm glad you made me feel better. But
yeah,
that
was my idea.
I thought of that.
Because it meant that when the Universal Monsters box set arrived, the fantastic Blu-rays that are all so fucking good.
Yeah, they're very good. That, have we spoke about that at all, or have
no,
we?
No, but we're just about to. But it did mean that because that had now been shunted to my Christmas present, I could open them and immediately start watching.
Exactly, absolutely.
Because you did give it away what it was going to be.
Why did I give it away? By telling you, by just coming out and telling you.
You called me on Skype and said, I'm just trying to decide what to get you for your birthday. Have you got the Universal Monsters Blu-ray box set?
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And
that's
I was thinking, what could he be thinking of getting me?
Exactly.
But yeah, they're really good. The entries and everything.
Good.
I was actually thinking that what we should do is maybe over the next 8 shows, we pick one of the Blu-rays and we review like that. Like just one segment on each show where we just go through the Universal Monsters box set.
That'd be a great idea, yeah. And then we could talk about the supplemental features if you'd be interested in doing that.
And the supplementary features as well.
What did I say? Supplemental? Yep.
Which is their features that are just slightly angrier. I'm supplemental! That's enough. But yeah,
supplemental means the exact same as supplementary.
I know, but
I had to check that up.
Does it not just sound angrier, though? Supplemental. No. Supplemental.
Make me sick.
I said that's enough.
That's enough. Right, okay. I think I've already made this joke at like the end of the show, and the people who think that I'm...
We haven't recorded the end of the show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Spoilers.
It was like, no, I mean, it was literally like 5 minutes ago.
Being Riversong. Yeah.
Oh, who would have believed that Riversong would actually turn out to be Melody Pond, Amy and Rory's child?
Exactly. I know. Spoilers. Oh, dear.
See if anybody has just listened to that and gone, what? I'm so disappointed.
I was working my way through the box set.
Then you're fucking pathetic because it's on the telly.
Yeah, I was having a wee watch of the Vincent episode and I had the wee cry to myself.
That's a really good episode.
Oh man, it was great.
I've seen some of his work in reality.
Yeah, me too.
I've seen the Sunflowers.
Oh wow, fantastic. Where was that?
That was at the National Portrait Gallery. They were having an exhibition which featured a whole bunch of his, including the chair that doesn't quite seem to fit in the room. If you've seen it, you'll know what I mean. It's the chair that where he drew his basically the single room that he lived in. He had one chair, and if a child drew this picture of a room and the chair looked like that, you would go, "Your perspective is all out of whack. Yep. Where's that leg sitting?" But you know he's dead, so we forgive him.
Yep. Yeah, there's a few of them. I mean, there's two in Glasgow. He did a picture of an art dealer whose name escapes me at this point. I think it's something like Alex Reed or something. I don't remember offhand, but that's in Glasgow. And then there's a picture of an old mill that he drew, and that's also in Glasgow. There's a full list that you can find at Van Gogh Gallery.com.
Yep.
And that gives you locations of the vast majority of the work that's out there, and it's really cool to kind of know where these things are and then be able to maybe. I think the majority of stuff was like between Paris and Amsterdam.
Well, this was a kind of touring exhibition, so it had
fantastic.
It had some Picasso and Rembrandt and everything.
Fantastic.
Like, see when you look through your books in school and you see the water lilies, and you think that looks really nice. You have absolutely no idea how massive it is. It is fucking enormous.
I think seeing these things and seeing the texture of them is kind of... It's a completely different thing for seeing a picture and a two-dimensional piece of paper, whereas if you're actually seeing it there, you get to see each of the tiny brush strokes and so on.
Especially with an artist like Van Gogh, because he was very, very thick with the paint.
Sure.
And the depending on where you stand, it sort of slightly changes the way the picture looks, just because individual brush strokes do have a shadow.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a connection there to a connection with the Doctor Who episode to the film that we saw this week, I, Frankenstein. Bill Nye was the curator of the museum, or the tour guide of was it the Louvre, or where was it? I don't remember. Anyway, some kind of exhibition.
It might have been the Portrait Gallery.
Uh-huh. Sure. So,
is that the bit when you had a little bubble?
Oh man, that was amazing, that bit. I was like, oh dude, this is great. So yeah.
What is Bill Nye doing now?
Well, we'll find out later on.
All I will say is that maybe minute and a half performance in Doctor Who is better than the entirety of that film that we will talk about later. But
I saw him earlier this year in In Time or About Time.
I actually watched that 2 weeks ago.
What did you think?
I thought, oh for fuck's sake, that cunt's made the same film again.
It's incredibly middle class.
It's so fucking middle class that
it's achingly middle class. Like,
oh my god, do you think she might have a drink problem? Well, she just got shit faced and drove her car into another car. The only film that he's made that I can actually say that I would happily watch again is The Boat That Rocked.
Oh yeah, sure, the Radio Caroline thing.
Yeah, which has a different title in the US.
What's the title?
I can't remember, but actually, quite handily, what is happening with all these things linking together tonight? But it features Philip Seymour Hoffman, who...
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Sadly passed away, and
that's right, absolutely.
Is one of my favourite actors of all time.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He also passed away whilst we were in the middle of planning a podcast about Magnolia that he was also in. That was a bit freaky, because I had... watched Magnolia again, and then went on to watch like Capote and stuff like that again, and Punch Drunk Love. The man just so many really good performances. Punch Drunk Love actually also features a really good performance from Adam Sandler.
Sure.
If you can believe that such a thing is possible.
Punch Drunk Love was pretty good, actually. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. That's
not too bad.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
He also
made Boogie Nights.
It's not too bad at all.
Boogie Nights is fantastic. But you haven't seen Magnolia yet, and if you like Punch Drunk Love and you like Boogie Nights, you're going to really enjoy Magnolia.
Very cool. Very cool.
Anyway,
so yeah, have you seen anything else? Or
I've seen loads, but what about you? What's your news?
What's my news? Well, I'm leaving Glasgow, which is my big news. So the reason that we've kind of been on a break is because I've been very busy preparing for something, for an interview, and I'm actually changing jobs and moving back down to Ayrshire. So that should be quite exciting.
And who knew that gigolos had to do interviews?
Exactly. Absolutely. It's a rigorous process. I thought you said juggalos.
No.
I was thinking that's probably closer to my skill set, is being fat, having a beard, and liking the Insane Clown Posse,
ladies can be juggalos as well.
That's it, absolutely. Juggalettes, they're called, I believe. Yeah. And they drink Faygo.
I'd like to grab them all by the fucking jugular.
So yeah, apart from that, I've seen a couple of things. I've seen a great movie, actually, I don't know if it's great, but I really liked it, called Blood Glacier.
Yeah, that was on Love Film, which you have gone selfishly and cuntishly. Gone to Love Film.
Sure. I mean, I can't really argue with either of those. Yeah, so I've shifted over to Love Film because it's got a better selection of
It's a
films than
bit more
Netflix.
middle
Sorry.
class. It's got.
You're fur at the night, man. I'm
It's
telling you,
got.
my reputation is being destroyed this evening.
It's got
So
four
yeah.
weddings on it. It's.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It ticks all the boxes for me. So Blood Glacier is a German film, I think, and it's
It is German.
and it's otherwise known as The Station. I won't really say too much about it, but I mean it's certainly influenced by like John Carpenter and his work, and I would definitely recommend it to anybody that likes that type of horror. It's low budget, but very, very well executed. And I'd very much highly recommend that one to people. And I think that's one that we could probably talk about at some point in the future as well, because I think it's a great wee movie. The other film I saw was Byzantium, which I will almost definitely be wanting us to discuss because that one is something else, directed by Neil Jordan.
The inventor of the shoe.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, that one kind of brought to mind some of the themes of Children of a Darker Dawn, to which Jason snapped back, "Oh yeah, because I'm Irish, right?" Or something to that effect, and I was like, okay, whatever.
Oh,
So Jason, if you're
now that he's
listening,
on the not on the show, you can
get it
start getting
ready.
bitchy. What the fuck?
Ain't knows I'm only
There's
kidding.
that secret project we're working on right out the fucking window.
I know, absolutely. So Jason, if you're listening, get it up you.
Is it not
This one.
you're from like Scotland, you're actually get it run you.
I'm from Scotland, so I should be writing like Irvine Welsh. So yeah, I totally get where he's coming from. That it's, I think that kind of thing sometimes happens, is that directors from the same country get lumped in together if they're working in the same genre. But there's certain parallels that people will enjoy, and I dug it. So I'm sure that we'll discuss that at some point in the
Well,
future.
I do like Neil Jordan's films. I actually,
Vampire films, yeah, as well,
well, no,
absolutely.
I was actually going to say I really liked Michael Collins,
Yeah, well, there you
which
go.
you can't get much more Irish than that.
Exactly. And the other movie I saw was Zombie Holocaust, aka Dr. Butcher MD, aka Zombie 3.
Why, oh why, oh why do you do this to me every week?
Have you seen that one?
No, I did look it up once though and went, no, just no.
It was actually all right. It's I mean, the thing that we quite often like about these kind of films, like The Beyond or House by the Cemetery or whichever ones, regardless of how little you enjoy the plot, or like if you're getting quite frustrated by the thing making no sense, you know that there's going to be a set piece where you're going to get a really great practical effect that looks the part and that kind of draws you in and keeps you interested. And Dr. Butcher MD has got the same, you know, the same. Well, it was Zombie Holocaust, the version that I saw, rather than the Dr. Butcher MD, which has got like 2 minutes of additional footage shoehorned in from some anthology film or something.
All right.
Yeah, the footage isn't very good. I think it's basically to provide an introduction, and it just doesn't work. But yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It's definitely not Zombie Flesh Eaters. It's not that film, although it does reuse footage from that film, and it does reuse cast members. Ian McCulloch from Echo and the Bunnymen is also in it. Not Ian McCulloch from Echo and the Bunnymen, but
Yeah.
Ian McCulloch, the actor, is in it, playing pretty much the same role as he played in Zombie flesh eaters. So, hey, if you've got an hour to spare, it's worth a watch.
Is that short?
No, maybe it's an hour and a half. I don't know. It'll be something like that. An hour and a half, something in that kind of level.
I think I will be checking out Byzantium, though, because it's good.
Byzantium's definite recommend, and it's one that I would say we should probably talk about at some point in the future.
It's got Gemma Arterton in it.
Absolutely, from As If.
Yep. And it's got Saoirse Ronan in it as well, from The Lovely Bones and Hannah. Hannah.
Does that not mean like Freedom in Ireland?
Yeah.
Swarcy, yeah.
I thought it was Saoirse.
Oh, that's no.
Is it not?
I don't know, because Evan Greer told me the pronunciation. So
it's also got, and he's got Johnny Lee Miller in it.
It has, yeah.
And I was at his stag do.
Were you?
When he was getting married to one of his co-hosts from Hackers.
There you go.
It was Angelina Jolie.
I don't remember him being in it.
I don't know what Angelina Jolie's up to now, but.
Mm.
She's currently residing in the Where Are They Now files.
Yep.
But yeah, I was actually at his stag do.
There you go.
Inadvertently.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, he is in it, right? I've just remembered who he plays, that's fine. Yep.
I actually did also start watching Elementary.
What's Elementary?
It's an American.
Oh yeah, with him in it, that's the Sherlock Holmes thing, right? Yeah.
And
who's his assistant? It's somebody mad, isn't
it's
it?
It's like, Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu, that's right. Is it any good?
Well, I've actually just started watching the second series, because I gave up on the first series after the two of them met, and he said something to her about, oh, you drive, or something. She went, how do you know that? And he said, you've dropped your driving license. And I thought, I just can't be fucked with this.
Yeah.
And then I caught the trailer for the second series, and Sean Pertwee's in it and everything, and I was like, that looks a bit better. So I started watching it. It was quite good.
What did you make of the Sherlock series, the Cumberbatch series?
I liked it as I was watching it, and then as soon as it finished, I kind of went, they've just like fucking, they've basically just retconned.
Uh-huh, sure.
They've gone, let's have an entire series, and then at the end of the series, let's go, oh, yeah, he's not dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of pissed me off.
Right.
A little bit. Right. You know, it was like, oh, let's press the God button.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I haven't rewatched any of it. You know, I do like
right,
the way
okay,
they do
with
it.
Sure.
But what did you think?
I'm really no convinced by that Moriarty. And like the last sequence certainly didn't do anything to convince me of that being a good idea, or that actor being a good idea. For me, it's one of these things where I thought they would introduce it at the end of the first series, and then it would kind of expand and you would kind of get to see more of his character, and I'm still very much unconvinced by it. And I think as well, I mean, the fact that it's 3-episode series and now we've got a 2-year wait until the next series, to me that's...
Are you going to care?
Who's going to care in 2 years' time? That's what I don't understand.
I was kind of left cold by the guy that portrayed Moriarty as well. But also, I was kind of left doubly cold by the number of plot holes that were in that Moriarty thing, because at the end of the day, his whole get-out-of-jail-free card is that he's supposedly been on kids' TV, and he was an actor, and he's the storyteller. There's a DVD available, and he's meant to be on fucking children's BBC.
Yep.
But he's been on the front page of all these newspapers, and not one person went, that's a storyteller.
Yep.
That's just bullshit.
Another thing I was going to say that kind of ties us back into a conversation that we might have later is Benedict Cumberbatch was obviously in was in the stage version of Frankenstein with Johnny Lee Miller. And
everything's linking up. What is going on?
And every night they swapped roles. So one night it would be
Johnny Lee Miller is Frankenstein, and next night he's Victor.
Yeah, demonstrating the kind of interchangeability of Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster. Who is the man and who is the monster? And yeah, it's interesting, and it's one that we'll maybe come back to later on in the show.
Do you think?
I can confidently predict that as long as you don't edit it out.
Will we? I don't even remember that. Not that we're recording the intro after we've recorded two of the segments.
There we go.
That's not the sort of thing we would do.
Absolutely not.
That would be facetious of us, wouldn't it?
Yep. And directed by Danny Boyle, who, as we know, had a conversation with Jason Figgis, who, as we know... lots of lots of linkages tonight. Absolutely.
Danny Boyle did Trainspotting as well, of course.
There we go.
Written by Irvin Welsh and.
My mind's blown.
And yesterday I sent a tweet to Irvin Welsh and John S. Baird when they were plugging the fact that Filth is now available to buy on DVD. And I simply said to them, it used to be that we would say, this film is available to rent. Now we say, this film is available. Torrent. Discuss.
Yeah.
And John S. Baird retweeted it. Irvin Welsh never said a thing. Although, once, about a year ago, Irvin Welsh followed me on Twitter. And I went, oh, that's quite nice. Irvin Welsh has followed me. I must have said something that he liked. And then he unfollowed me like 3 minutes later.
It must have been a clerical error on his part.
I hadn't said it. He must have been shit-faced again.
Allegedly.
Not right. Allegedly. Follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, this week we're discussing RoboCop, the 2014 remake. And we're also discussing I, Frankenstein. We're going to be joined for both segments by special guests, by friends of the show, Duncan McLeish and Ideal Cynic. So it'll be interesting to hear what their views are.
Yes, it will.
Yes, it will indeed. We'll have a short break there, and then we'll be back to discuss...
I, Frankenstein.
And we'll be back after this.
This is Jamie from Devour the Podcast. Do you enjoy horror commentary with straightforward honesty?
Oh my god, fuck this movie. Fuck this movie so hard.
Oh my goodness, you know, halfway through this movie, I was just like, let's get this thing going.
Fuck this movie. Humor and an obvious passion for the genre.
Like a good baby. I'll kick him in the face.
I like the cut of your jib.
The ceiling, Grandma. Don't make me get out the broom.
Oh, your tears are like wine.
They used to call that the vapors.
Cupcakes are kind of the Schindler's List of desserts. It's a pure good.
I love the idea of up-and-coming horror directors taking on the found footage genre. I really, really like that idea.
And that's really the worst sin you can commit as far as filmmaking is concerned, is making a film that's just average.
Well, that doesn't really inspire any kind of discussion, whether it's, you know, to rip it apart or praise it. Then you should spend time with David and me.
And Bo.
As we discuss horror films from old classics.
Deep Red. Empire of the Ants. Lisa and the Devil. The Baby. The Toxic Avenger.
To new favorites.
Absentia. Cabin in the Woods. The Loved Ones. Shadow of Death. VHS. The Woman.
Check us out on iTunes or at devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. Devour the Podcast is a proud member of the Horrorphilia Podcasting Network.
Okay, guys, and we're back to discuss a wonderful film called I, Frankenstein. And we're joined by our cinema buddy and our good friend. It was our good friend until I forced him to see I, Frankenstein, Mr. Ideal Cynic. Cynic, how the devil are you?
I'm not particularly pleased with you, Mr. Vacant.
Why is that?
It's nice to talk to my good friend Gil Rokitansky, as per usual.
Uh-huh.
But with regard to you, you can die in the lowest circle of hell.
And why is that?
Well, it concerns a little film called I, Frankenstein.
Yeah, sounds good. Frankenstein yeah, as a superhero, yeah?
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. Do you know, I always thought there was something funny about you. I really did. And then you came up with this idea. Let's go and see I, Frankenstein. Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's go and see it. And then the day we're going to see it, we get a tweet saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm feeling unwell. I fucking know your game, Faker. You basically made me and Rokitansky sit through 90-odd pishy minutes of the worst fucking exposition-filled film I have ever had the misfortune to fucking watch in my entire life. Not only that, because you didn't go, I had to sit there and hold Gil's hand because you weren't there. And the bastard just gets sweaty palms.
That wasn't my hand.
So, Scott Girth. Well, Mr. Cynic, it's a pleasure to speak to you as well. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's move on to talk about
Robocop.
I, Frankenstein. So, I, Frankenstein released in 2014. Synopsis as... here we go. Set in a dystopic present where vigilant gargoyles and ferocious demons rage in a battle for ultimate power, Victor Frankenstein's creation, Adam, finds himself caught in the middle as both sides race to discover the secret of his immortality. From the creators of the hit supernational saga Underworld comes the action thriller I, Frankenstein, written by the screen and written for the screen and directed by Stuart Beattie and based on the graphic novel I, Frankenstein by Kevin Grevio and brought to life by a cast that includes Aaron Eckhart, Bill Nighy, Yvonne Strahovski, Miranda Otto, Jay Courtney and others. So it's from Lionsgate and yeah. Gil, can we start off by before we get to Mr. Cynic, I'll ask your opinion on this little movie. What did you think?
Have you seen Punisher Warzone?
I haven't seen Punisher Warzone, no.
It's quite good. It's just a big, brutal comic book movie that will probably never, ever get any sort of sequel, but it is just the Punisher just kicking arse, and it's full of blood. And it was partially rewritten by Stuart Beattie.
Ah, right, okay. Uh-huh.
So I liked that film.
Uh-huh.
But then he wrote the movie version of 30 Days of Night.
Oh, right, okay, sure.
Which I fucking hated because it looked like Josh Hartnett was reading every line off his fucking shoes. It was so bad. It was... like, they're all hiding in wooden cabins, and I just kept getting the feeling that all Josh Hartnett would have to do to avoid the vampires would be stand against a wall, because he was so wooden in that he would just blend in. He also wrote Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, which I quite liked. So, I didn't know what to think going in to see this one. And, well, you recommended it. And I thought, well, Roscoe usually recommends some quite good stuff.
Now, hold on. I didn't recommend it. I said it would be good for a laugh to go and see I, Frankenstein.
You said it was the one film this year that you were really looking forward to. And
I did
you
not
were going
see
to
that.
Love
That's
it.
That's how you sold that to me, Ross. That's how you sold it to me.
Oh, that is absolute nonsense.
And see... you were saying earlier on when we were talking that there's a speech in the film that you wanted to try and find so you could read it out, something to do with 666 armies of hell unleashed by Satan, and you said that it's only like 5 or 6 minutes in. I don't think that Mr. Cynic or myself actually heard that speech because of the furious blood that was pumping through our ears at the time. Literally within 3 minutes of this film starting, I did turn around to Mr. Cynic and say, I'm going to fucking kill him.
Yeah, I think the writing is pretty much on the wall. 5 or 6 minutes into the film when... well, basically, as soon as it stops being a Frankenstein film and starts being just ridiculous and horrible and underworldly.
Yeah, that was my description of it. I did actually look it up. I described it as Dylan Dog, Underworld, Exposition City, Van Helsing, and Gretel, CGI Fest on Ice.
Yep, absolutely. And it definitely was all of those things.
I think we don't even need to review the film. I think what we should do is review Ross's behaviour.
This is it's an intervention now.
It's a performance review for the year.
Because, do you know, ever since he went to New York, he's thought of himself as this big guy. He can cancel plans at the last second.
Cancel Netflix.
He just thinks, you know, that's, I don't need these guys. I've been in New York. I know everything. I've seen the world. You've seen fuck all, Vacant. I've had enough of this behaviour.
If this is what happens when you sign up for Love Film, I'm having no fucking part of it.
No, absolutely none. Absolutely none. He's cancelled Netflix. This shows you how low this bastard has stooped. Goes to an inferior product. He makes us go to an inferior film. Gil had to cry himself to sleep that night because he never got to see ye.
Yep.
And was it an apology? No, it was, I'm no feeling well. That just doesn't cut it. I'm just not happy with this at all.
Totally fucking Admiral Ackbard.
Aye?
It's a trap! Let's go to the cinema and see this brilliant film. Oh, I can't make it. You just go on your own.
Hey, Gil, nice one explaining your own joke. I like that. That's super cool.
Never talk down to your audience. That's what Ross does. You don't need to.
That's my joke.
I know. I usually have to explain his jokes. But yeah, was there anything redeeming in this film at all?
Nothing.
No.
Nothing. Nothing at all. It was the exposition in it alone. I've never actually saw such an exposition heavy film in my life.
The narration at the start, yeah.
The only thing that could redeem it is if we could crucify Ross as a result of him making us go and see that.
That's so terrible.
You know, I did once proffer that as an idea for a music video for him, and he wasn't for it.
Do I know why that? In fact, no, we're not going anywhere. This isn't a sectarian broadcast.
Oh! That is shocking, man. There we go. Very uncool. Very uncool indeed.
No, what is very uncool is your behaviour. Let's just come back to that. Don't try and wriggle out of this one, Bacon. You know what you've done.
I mean, I think any Frankenstein film that starts off in the ice is a pretty good way to start in the North Pole, and that side of things in the Arctic. That side of things was good. That's like 3 minutes of the film.
Just pick up a piece of paper that's near you and look at that. It's as white as the start of this film.
Uh-huh.
And as interesting as the entirety of this film.
Yeah, and then, like, as I said before, 6 minutes in, we get a speech about the 666 tribes of hell that have been unleashed by Satan onto the world, and that the gargoyles, basically, it's Frankenstein has survived. The character, the monster, Frankenstein's monster, a.k.a. Frankenstein, if people are uncomfortable with the name Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster being used interchangeably, ask Boris Karloff, who I think shouldn't probably know better than you. but
historical bitch slap.
But yeah,
That's just an example of Ross's lofty behaviour since he came back to New York. You know what I mean? He just thinks he's better than everyone. He can come up with these, you know, obscure references to movie stars gone by. Nobody cares about Karloff.
It's all about Aaron Eckhart now, baby.
It's all about Aaron Eckhart now.
Oh, man. So basically, Frankenstein, the monster, has been... he's still alive. He's been roaming around, dealing with demons who have been trying to find out his secret of immortality for many, many years. And he's been taught a way to dispatch them by a sacred gargoyle, order of gargoyles, who have the power to shapeshift into human form.
It really is as bad as it sounds.
It's and then basically we get to modern day, where Aaron Eckhart has cut his hair and bought himself a hoodie.
He knows how to use hair gel, but he can't wash his fucking face.
Essentially, what he's done is he's basically taken his sartorial advice from the Angels in Dogma. Yeah, you know, it's the long coat and the hoodie. That's the way forward, it would seem.
So yeah, and the idea is that this is there's a war being waged between the gargoyles and the demons or vampires or some shit, and they're the demons have found this way of are hoping to find the secret of immortality with the intention of building an army of corpses
for all the dead demons, because demons can only possess something that's dead. Seems like a really fucking stupid idea. And how did they even know that?
Yeah.
How would they know? And also, when one demon finally meets Frankenstein and dies, why is it not just fucking possess him? It's a film just full of stupid plot holes. Like, demons that are aware that they can only possess one type of being. But in order for them to do that, they have to pursue the only being that actually fits that bill. So unless they'd possessed him beforehand, they'd never have known that.
Sure.
It's just stupid.
I think the major problem with the film is it would be a lot like listening to the Bodacious Horror podcast with Ross himself, you know, just Ross, because it constantly talks down to you, you know, it does a wee thing and then explains that it actually did this thing, you know?
No, that's my job on the podcast. I do the talking down. He does the frowning.
Nah, he's not been the same since he came back from New York, Gil. Let's face it. He's
Big Show.
You'd think he'd been to LA, do you know what I mean? And talking to all these studio execs. You know the worst aspect to this entire thing? The worst aspect is I can no longer enjoy film because of us. That's it. Film as an art form is done for me because he made me go and see this piece of shit film.
So, yeah, so is it a recommend from you, Mr. Cynicus?
Eat shit and die, Ross.
No, I really enjoyed leaving the
cinema.
You know, wandering about Asda for 5 minutes was more enjoyable than the entirety of this film. I can't believe that it cost $65 million.
I know, $65 million is insane.
But it's CGI.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of CGI in this film. And you guys saw it in three dimensions. How did you feel about that?
I was £2.50 worse off because of it, and that upset me.
Because of you.
Because of you.
Yeah.
Because of you, I'm £2.50. Do you know what? I'm not actually going to last a month now. I'm going to die in a pit of penury. Because of you, you putrescent prick.
So some strong emotions there about I, Frankenstein. did you think, Gil, that the 3D added anything to the experience?
I felt that the script itself detracted so much that the film was actually just in two dimensions.
And as Gil will testify to, about halfway through the film, I took my 3D glasses off.
I just started watching it because
it literally made no difference.
There you go. Yeah. And I believe it was done retroactively anyway.
Well, it's such a CGI fest that...
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be done quite easily.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is, how many times are you watching this film just going, there's no actual people here? I'm watching Frozen. Mm-hmm. That's pretty...
Frozen was good.
I like
Frozen was excellent. Highly recommended. See, the Bodacious Horror podcast does not recommend I, Frankenstein, but we do recommend Disney's Frozen.
Yeah. And giving a boot up the arse to Ross anytime you see him in the street. It is legally sanctioned because he makes his friends, and I've used friends in inverted commas here, he makes his friends go and see shite.
I know, somebody that makes you go and see this film is not your friend.
No. Anyone who recommends this, you know they are one of your worst enemies.
Yep. I don't know what I did to Ross to make him be so cruel to me.
And I think on the car journey home, I did ask you that. I did ask you, what have you actually done to this guy? Have you insulted his mother? Have you shat in his breakfast cereal? What have you done to deserve them to make you go and see this shitey film?
I think there may be a yes to both of them.
Ah, right. Well, that's kind of understandable. You're still a prick for making us go, though. I didn't do anything to him.
It was just a complete and utter waste of a film. And, you know, I hadn't seen the trailer before going to see it and thought, maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised by, you know, a big... Because I didn't mind some of the Underworld films. I think there's like two of... I've seen all of them. There's about... There's two of them that I can watch and not remember anything from. So it's essentially getting to watch it again.
As I said to you in the cinema, though, the Underworld films had Kate Beckinsale in a leather catsuit. This is Arne Eckhart looking...
Well, pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Aye, pretty fucked up.
The continual exposition all the way through it.
Because you're like, there's absolutely no need for that.
But it also makes no sense as well, because a lot of the things that are the exposition, the person that's delivering that exposition is actually just for them, for their character. It's a supposition.
Aye.
But it's just a supposition. Everybody, all the way through this film, you just get all this supposition that is actually correct, and therefore just...
However, points for comedy, for constant reference to the Gargoyle Queen. Because every time they said, let's go and see the Gargoyle Queen, I actually burst into tears laughing.
Yeah, it was just all the time, like, she didn't have a name. It was just, let's go and see the Gargoyle Queen. We'll go and see the Gargoyle Queen. And then you've got Bill Nighy, who...
Who's playing Bill Nighy?
Yeah. And he stops calling him Adam and just starts calling him Frankenstein. And actually, I was thinking about the title. And a lot of people have said the title's crap because it's the monster. But I think the title actually only makes any sense right at the very end.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. The title actually makes sense at the very final bit of its fucking position.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It does actually make sense there. I've heard a couple of criticisms about the whole title thing, but clearly they were smart. Unlike Usgill, they were smart and left before the fucking end of that bastard film, and that's why it didn't make sense.
Yeah, the Frankenstein monster, Frankenstein's monster thing has been... dealt with for years and years and years. It was even dealt with in Son of Frankenstein from the 1930s, well, by the early 40s, late 30s or early 40s.
There we go, history. Look at me. I've been to New York. I've been to all these wee horror.
I've been to the big school, son.
I've done all this. Right. Whatever, you wank.
I've been to the witch's dungeon. Have you been to the witch's dungeon?
Look at my pictures on Twitter. Look where I've been. You haven't. Fuck you. I'm better than you. I'm surprised you've still got an audience vacant. You're a prick.
strong words there. But as I say, the words, the Frankenstein's monster difference and the use of... the two names interchangeably. It's not an issue, and it's not something to get hung up on, in my opinion. But no, there we go.
The kind of major issue of it is the fact that you made us go to it, Ross, and that is the issue that I will continually be hung up to till the day I die.
Well, at least you had a wee night out.
and a forthcoming aneurysm.
Aye. Flippant? You're trying to be flippant with me?
Aneurysm is a song by the pop band Nirvana.
Aneurysm is essentially going to be my state of being after I got off this Skype call.
So is it a recommend from you guys? Do you think this is one that we should recommend to our listeners?
We should recommend to your enemies. To our enemies, aye.
To your enemies, never listeners. If you like if you hate your listeners, tell them to go see it. You know, like you hate us, Ross. You know,
aye.
Feel free to tell them. In fact, I think you hate humanity. And you probably would recommend it.
Yeah. If there was an Indiegogo campaign for this film, I would have funded it.
You'd have funded all of it. All 65 million so much.
I know it did. I know you're flush.
Well, on that note, it's certainly been a real pleasure having you on the show, Mr. Cynic.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Gil. Not you, Ross. Never.
Well, Absolutely.
And, so, audacious listeners, it's been beautiful talking to you all.
Okay, so guys, you can follow Mr. Ideal Cynic on Twitter if you're so inclined. live tweets Question Time, and that kind of gives you some idea of the man that he is. But thank you very much, Ideal Cynic, for joining us in the show, and we'll catch your ass down the road.
Bye, gal. Go fuck yourself, Ross.
Bye.
Howdy,
folks. Got blood, violence, freaks of nature. You come to the right place. My name is Gary, and I'm your guide to Cinema Beef Podcast. Every episode, we not only deliver film reviews, we also dismantle some of your favorite and most hated films, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse.
Hey, you shut your face! If we want to hear you talk, I will shove my arm up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet.
All right, calm down. Every show I hope to have a new co-host, podcasters, and listeners alike. That's right, I'm talking to you people. I take all comers.
You're slapped.
That's not very nice. The only rules, well, let's ask the best cooler in the business.
All you have to do is follow three simple rules. One, never underestimate your opponent. Expect the unexpected. Two, take it outside. Never start anything inside the bar unless it's absolutely necessary. And three, be nice.
So join the insanity and please vent your frustrations. I'm available on TalkShoe, iTunes, and Stitcher Smart Radio. And remember, here at the Cinema Beef Podcast, if you got beef, I've got the grinder.
Okay, guys, it's our great privilege to have with us at this time Mr. Duncan McLeish from the podcast Under the Stairs. Duncan, welcome to Gillan Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast.
It feels fantastic to be back, guys. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Can I just say that you're sounding clear as a bell?
Yeah, I may have invested money that I don't have from my unborn child fund into a new computer and microphone. So.
Wow.
Don't tell my wife.
There we go. Well,
has she not seen it? Is it in?
I think we can assume that she's seen it if they're having a baby together, Gil. Has it got tattoos on it?
I hope so. If it doesn't, it won't take long.
Oh.
If it doesn't have tattoos, it's not his.
No, I meant his penis. I meant his penis.
All right.
God damn it, Billy. Duncan, welcome to Gillan Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. How the devil are you?
I'm doing really great. Thanks very much. And how about yourselves? You sound like you've got a bit of a cold.
I have got a bit of a cold, and you're trying my patience, Sonny. So, Duncan, I'm led to believe that you have seen the film RoboCop.
I have indeed. I went to see it on Friday night.
There you go. And myself and Gil Rokitansky have also been to see the film RoboCop. So the reason that we've got you on the show, not that we need to tell you, but to tell other people, as professionalism, is because we're going to be discussing RoboCop, the remake, the 2014 version of RoboCop.
Yeah, I went to see the very first performance that I could.
Very good, and that was at 10:15 on a Friday morning.
Yep.
There we go.
10 people there.
There we go.
And two of them were kids, so obviously truanting.
There you go.
Wee bastards.
There you go.
Oh, you can learn everything you need to know from a RoboCop film, can't you? All the life lessons are in a RoboCop film. Don't move to Detroit. Don't become a cop. That's pretty much it.
Absolutely. Words to live by. So this was directed by Jose Padilla. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. There we go. We're on to a good start. And it was written by Joshua Zetouma, Edward Neumeyer, and one more credit. There we go. One more credit. Who's the other credit? I want to know. Oh, no, it was written by Joshua Zetouma, and then they've got to credit the other two for the 1987 screenplay, which just doesn't follow.
Yep. Neumeyer and Michael Miner.
Right, okay. Okay, so, Gil, do you have a synopsis for this?
It's RoboCop. That's all it says here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In 2020.
Okay, hold on. I've got a better one than that. Yeah, I do. So because your one was coming off IMDb, and IMDb invariably sucks these days.
No, mine was coming off Wikipedia.
Wikipedia?
I was just going to read the first, like, two lines of the plot.
Wikipedia? I hardly knew her. Right. In Robocop.
Victim nearly killed him.
Right. In Robocop, the year is... Oh, this is rubbish. The year is 2028, and multinational conglomerate Omnicorp is at the centre of robotic technology. Overseas, their drones have been used by the military for years, and it's meant billions for Omnicorp's bottom line. Now, Omnicorp wants to bring their controversial technology to the home front, and they see a golden opportunity to do it. When Alex Murphy, a loving husband, father, and good cop, doing his best to stem the tide of crime and corruption in Detroit, is critically injured in the line of duty, Omnicorp sees their chance to build a part man, part robot police officer. There we go.
All cop. Part man, part machine, all cop.
There we go. Yep. So, very different film from the original Robocop, would you agree?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
I'm just really, really waiting to hear what you've got to say about it, Roscoe. Because as anyone that's listened to a lot of these podcasts will know, trying to get you to watch the original Robocop was like a mission that I had to go on.
That's correct.
I had to be specially trained. It took many times to finally get you to watch it, and then you did enjoy it.
Yep. The teachings of the Reverend were ingrained deeply into my veins, and I was terrified of seeing this film, the original film.
Because it's evil.
Because it's against the will of God. So, there we go.
Is he still reverending?
He's still reverending, and he's a very good reverend. But
so he's reverending and revered?
He was no fan of Robocop.
But he obviously went to see it. I love that. He went to see Robocop and just went, "This is the spawn of Satan!"
It's got a robot in it, don't give it a watch, was basically the synopsis that he gave. That was his review. It's not a recommend, as he said.
Does he do like a film review podcast now?
Two and a half stars out of five.
Like podcasts from the pulpit.
Podcasts from the pulpit. That's great. He's missing a track, isn't he? Okay, so yeah, very different film to the original. Duncan, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, it's funny because 2 years ago when I first started podcasting with the other site that I review for, the story had just come up that I'd just been handed to Jose Padilla to do the Robocop remake, and instantly the kind of geek rage kicked off, and I was like, "That if there's one film, you know, that does not need to be touched in a remake capacity, it's Robocop, because Robocop has quite a lot of the kind of political, social kind of underlying stories which run right through that film." And I was like, you know that if they're going to remake it, they're just going to gloss over that. They're just going to focus on the robot, obviously. And, you know, it's going to be like a marketing man's wet dream. And I was actually quite surprised that that's really not what it was. I mean, all I've done is they've really taken certain elements and completely modernized them. So instead of the kind of the levels of despair and, you know, the lack of money, poverty, etc., what they kind of focus on this time is more kind of the kind of drone technology that America's going through just now. You know, why send American troops over abroad when you can send machines to do that job? And that's kind of where they focus on. And I quite like the fact that they play on quite a few things, like Samuel Jackson's character he's like a broadcaster for what I would class as almost like a Fox News.
Yeah, absolutely.
He is Bill O'Reilly.
He is pretty much Bill O'Reilly. And I love that angle. So,
although he would be a self-loathing Bill O'Reilly if he was... If he was actually Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly is self-loathing, I deeply suspect.
Uh-huh. I think I think more, it would be more so if it was Samuel L. Jackson, though.
The thing that I quite liked about it is that there's enough nods to the original, whereas, like, if you've ever seen the Total Recall remake, they tried to do nods to the original, but they just come off as not being, not in the spirit of what, let me get this right, not in the spirit of which it should have been taken in the film. In the case of this one, you get the lines from the original film, but they've changed them to mean something quite different. And if you've seen the original, you'll laugh along with it, you know, or you'll go, oh yeah, that's that line from that. If you've never seen the original, it still makes sense. It's not as if they're just shoehorning them in. If you know what I mean. And I liked the story overall. The ending was a bit woolly for me, if I'm being honest. I didn't particularly like the ending, but...
Were you expecting that wasn't the ending?
Yeah.
Because that's how I felt at the end of the film. I thought, they're going to have to do something else, because it's just kind of fallen away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my only gripe. But I mean, I had spoke to you afterwards, Gil, and you said that there was, you know, you could see more potential for a sequel in this one. And I probably agree with that. The door's left kind of open that they can carry that forward in a more coherent fashion than they did with RoboCop 2, which I don't know if you have seen, Roscoe, but it's a mess. It's not as bad as RoboCop 3, mind you, but it's a mess of a film. So, yeah, I liked the casting. I thought Gary Oldman was really good in it. I really liked Michael Keaton. I thought Samuel Jackson was really good. And the guy that played RoboCop, whose name escapes me, he was in The Killing.
Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah, I thought he was all right as well. You don't have to be the most amazing actor to play a cyborg, really. So he did all right, actually. They've changed enough of it around, in my opinion, and updated it enough to merit the remake. Sure. And ultimately, that's what I thought they weren't going to be able to do. And I left with a smile on my face. So I've had to eat humble pie because I've been bitching about it for 2 years. So, yeah.
I'm the same. I was one of those instant geek rage people.
Yep. And you gave us, Gil, you gave us one of our best... It's really unfortunate that the film was so good, because you came up with a really great thing, and it was, "You're not my real dad," as a kind of meme for a RoboCop, which I thought was just brilliant. It was so funny.
I really found very little flaws in this new RoboCop. It's, a lot of people have been saying that you can't mess with it because it's a Paul Verhoeven classic, and he did these brilliant satires like that and Total Recall and Starship Troopers, but RoboCop is the only one that isn't based on another source material. And I kind of watched this one and at the end thought, this seems like it's a more mellow version of the story. It's a wee bit more reined in, and it could believably be like a film based on the source material that never existed. You know, if RoboCop had been like a Wild West styled comic.
Yeah.
That's what I thought about this. It seemed like it does actually fit alongside. I just really, really, really enjoyed it.
Sure.
But now for your review of it, Roscoe. Come on.
Absolutely. When this came out, when it came out, the news that they were going to remake RoboCop, obviously, RoboCop isn't a film that I've got a strong connection with in terms of an emotional tie to the film in the same way that maybe you have. Or the when I was that age, I was interested in Back to the Future, Bill and Ted, Wayne's World, that kind of thing. Those are the films that really kind of interested me. RoboCop just didn't do it for me for whatever reason, so I didn't really have the same kind of baggage associated with remaking this as perhaps the, like, for example, Star Wars sequels or something like that, where you're invested in it, where you've got or prequels or sequels or whatever. So yeah, I mean, from that side, I was less invested in a sequel, and I was more open to it being good and seeing where it went. As news kind of came out about the film, we saw pictures of what RoboCop was going to look like, and it was never very promising, to be honest, in terms of the photos that were being shown in things like Geek Tyrant and different news sites like that. So I was kind of going into this fairly cynically, to be quite truthful.
Which is unlike you.
Yeah. Well, with some things, but with most things I tend not to be too cynical about things. But, I mean, the interesting thing about this film is that I know you were saying, Duncan, that it updates a lot of the stuff and kind of takes... obviously the issue of drones and whether it's acceptable to use drone technology abroad, whether it's acceptable to then apply that in the United States, and looking at the double standard there, looking at the rhetoric of Fox News, looking at how the media can manipulate politicians, looking at how lobbying groups can, I mean, all that stuff is in there, but I think it's telling a less interesting story than the original RoboCop. From that side, the satire is less, in my opinion, it's less on point. The satire in the original RoboCop is about Detroit that's rotten from the inside out. It's about a poverty. It's about corruption. It's about it was basically a parable on private policing and the role that private policing could potentially have in the future. And I mean, what that film set out in a lot of respects has come to pass with regard to private policing, because we're in that situation in this country where police forces are actually run by private firms in this country, in the UK. So that to me, RoboCop, for me, the original RoboCop was far more on point from that side. With regard to the way that this film is pulled together, I think in a lot of respects it's a far better looking film and a far better the direction I think is very solid. I mean, there's that great what scene is it now where we get to see RoboCop as he actually is, and it's kind of like this kind of Dennis Potter-esque horrendous vision of this talking head with a set of lungs attached to a broken up brain and one hand. So that kind of horrendous vision, to me, that was utterly fantastic, and definitely one of the highlights of the film. The aspects in Tehran, I thought Jackie Earl Haley, is that right? Earl Haley, I thought he was good, but I think he would have probably, I don't know, it's hard to kind of weigh up. I mean, Michael Keaton played a strong role, but you wonder whether Jackie Earl Haley could have maybe done that better. I don't know. There's a value in having somebody who's got that kind of slick Tony Blair-esque delivery as the CEO of this kind of this vicious multinational company that's doing some pretty unethical stuff. I think there's a good reason why they've got this kind of quite slick character and these fairly innocuous yes men surrounding them. Well, yes man and woman surrounding them.
Yeah. And that was Jennifer L.
Uh-huh,
I hadn't seen her in anything for ages. I always remember her from the Chamomile Lawn.
Ah, right, okay.
Where she seemed to find every opportunity to lose her clothing.
There we go. Which,
which that really appealed to the teenage me when that was released.
There you go.
That's how you get people to watch period dramas. But yeah, should we do some spoilers and just tell people, like, just fast forward a wee bit?
Okay, well, we'll say that there's going to be spoilers for the next 5 minutes or so, and if you want to fast forward through that, then do it for the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, I really liked the aspect of the suit being black.
Sure.
Only at the points when he's essentially under the control of Michael Keaton.
Ah, yes. Right, okay.
Because at the end of the film, of course, he reverts to being Silver, which is the iconic RoboCop that we're all familiar with.
Familiar with, sure.
And that's because he has, by the end of the film, become the same as he essentially was at the beginning.
That's really interesting. That's great.
I really liked the... Because I hated the black suit. I was like... You know, that really bad... thing. I was like, you can't tweet this. The one thing that I don't like about the new RoboCop is that he's black. Because some people just might take that in the wrong way. But
yep. What did you think of the main character, Alex Murphy, and his partner, and their kind of Batman Begins style, Batman Year One style thing, where they're trying to take down organized crime? As the kind of original setup,
I did like it. I thought that Lewis was a bit sidelined. So I don't know if
they could have
felt that as well.
Yeah, I did think so. I did think so.
What about you, Duncan? What did you think of? Because we didn't see Lewis at all in the trailers or anything. There's a lot of this film has been hidden.
Well, that was the see when you first hear his name mentioned in the column, Lewis, and I was like, oh, fuck, right, we've completely changed this now. You know, obviously went from kind of, I would like to see strong female character to, you know, black cop, which is like it's a big jump. I quite like the fact that they kind of play with ethics as well through looking through Gary Oldman's eyes. If you look at him as a character,
Gary Oldman's eyes.
Yeah, the ethical stuff in it I thought was really, really well done as well.
Because the Michael Keaton character constantly justifies, you know, like, obviously, Gary Oldman's character, you know, he is essentially helping people by giving them prosthetics. And you see him try to get a guy to play guitar and all the rest. And what he's saying to him is, you know what I mean, we will fund things forever, but you just need to tweak this thing, sure, which is unethical. You know, and I'll fund you for the rest of your life. And think of all the people you'll be saving as a doctor. You want that, don't you? Mm-hmm. But you just have to tweak this little thing. So, I mean, I quite like the fact that they played with that as well. I think, like you were saying, Roscoe, I think one of the things that kind of got me is... And I don't know if necessarily the reason they didn't go far enough into a lot more of the kind of satirical look on society is because of the age rating. I don't know if maybe that's what it was. Maybe they just considered it to be slightly highbrow, but I was surprised they put as much in as they did for the age rating. If you know what I mean. I still think RoboCop is one of these remarkable flukes of a film that manages to balance a lot that it shouldn't necessarily be able to do and present it in a fashion which, you know, still stands the test of time now. It was always going to be a daunting task to try and tackle that. I was quite surprised they at least made a stab at it, because it would have been very, very easy just to make, you know, a film with a RoboCop that goes around shooting folk up and things exploding and all the rest. That kind of got me, as, you know, like, that was the biggest shock. It's when things started happening, you know, on the screen, where I saw where they were going with it. I was like, you know, this is a bit more highbrow than I was actually expecting. Because that's not what we used to in remakes. And I don't know if that's the because we all come from a horror background, that we're just used to horror remakes being, you know, appealing to the lowest common denominator and missing out on the things that made the original so good. I just went in with that attitude, and I was completely blown away by how little they did that. I was very impressed, actually.
I mean, the presentation, that's the thing, is that the presentation was very much of that style. It felt like a highbrow film in a lot of respects. And I mean, the thing that I was thinking during it was, okay, it's a 12A, but it's not going to sell a lot of RoboCops.
Yeah,
it's no good.
Buy the silver one.
You'd buy it for a dollar.
I was waiting for that.
I wouldn't buy that for a dollar.
For me, there was too much of that. In my opinion, it was kind of shoehorned in, and I didn't enjoy that in the same way that you sometimes enjoy these things in remakes. And I think genuinely the. Could have done without a lot of that, like, dead or alive, you're coming with me is the last line and stuff, and it was like, it was a great scene, and then you fucking ruin it by having dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Yeah.
It just, man, that and there was another bit, Jack Errol Haley, I wouldn't buy that for a dollar, and
yeah,
a couple of other things, but
no clear baddie either, I thought. I thought that was one of the big failings from the film, because you get him going after almost like the Clarence Boddicker sort of character.
Yep.
You get him going after him, right? And he takes him out about in the middle of the film, you know what I mean? And you're like, right, where are we going now? Oh, we're obviously going after the guys at Omnicorp. That's obviously where we're going next.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't, even Michael Keaton as a character to me wasn't as villainous as necessarily should have been. Mm-hmm. He's no Dick Jones, if you know what I mean. Jones is the epitome of all that was wrong in the 1980s, you know, in terms of corporate greed and, you know, manipulation and no help to the little man and all the rest, that Michael Keaton's character never really come across like that. He was too slick.
Do you know, Woody Guthrie once said that some people will rob you with a six gun and some people will rob you with a fountain pen.
Yeah.
And I think, if you're saying that character is everything that's wrong in the 80s, then yeah, I think Michael Keaton's character is everything that's wrong now.
Yeah.
Because it's these slick people who are able to present and manipulate government and power, lobbyists and so on, who are able to gently massage the public consciousness to make sure that their interests are being served.
Yes.
And I think that the slickness of that presentation, as much as I kind of agree with you that there could have been a bit more of him being a right utter shit behind the scenes, but at the same time, I think there's a value in him being that kind of Tony Blair, David Cameron type guy, where he's just, you know, super interested in you. You know, we just want to help you. We want to get things right for you. Protect the safety of the American people. These are the things that we're really interested in.
Yeah.
And that type of presentation, I think there's value in it, and I think there's a reason why he's there.
Yeah.
I think that he had people that did the shit things for him, as opposed to him ever really having to do any shit things. But what about the fact that they've brought the family in a lot more in this film? Because at first when that happened, I was kind of... you're aware of his family in the original, but in this remake, his family does end up playing a more important role. I thought that they got that balance quite right. Because in the original, nobody knows who RoboCop is. And that's something that only Lewis starts to figure out. But in this, they do, because they make a point of saying it is Alex Murphy, they have to put a face to RoboCop from the start of this, otherwise people wouldn't accept him being on the street. So then you have to keep the family in. Now, I thought that the family stuff was done quite well. The fact that his little boy was looking quite terrified at him the first time he saw him.
Yeah. No, I quite liked that as well. I think, that was an angle that obviously, like you said, that they never really looked into at all. We see him have flashbacks of the same sequences in the original RoboCop of, you know, small snippets of his kid who's into some sort of
TJ Laser. TJ Laser.
And he's got, you know, and can you do that? And that's where the spinny gun thing comes in and all the rest. And I mean, that's about it. You only really see them through flashbacks. And this film, obviously, you say they're put there. I quite like the fact that she says at one point, she's like, Gary Oldman kind of reiterates that she says that she's going to go to the press if they don't do that. And the first thing that comes out of that woman's mouth is, we can get an injunction to stop that straight away, you know, without even batting an eye. You know, he's no longer her husband. He is a product.
Yeah.
And that's how they want. I mean, they're constantly trying to market him throughout the film, hence the change in colour, all the rest. You know, it's all marketing things. It's what will appeal to the American people as a product. Because RoboCop is a product. He's not really, it's a bonus that he's clearing up the town, but he's a product first and foremost. And I quite like that. And she's kind of almost like, not a moral compass, but she's kind of like an anchor there for that character to kind of come back to being human almost, which I quite liked that angle.
And during the period where he's sedated, I really liked the fact that this film made it look like he was always going to know who he was and everything, and then they sedate him, and he becomes the RoboCop from the original film.
Aye, completely changes.
Yeah, it's him that's not aware of the connections that he has with these people anymore, as opposed to in the original, it's them that aren't aware that they have connections with RoboCop.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, a lot better, so much more better than... I'm still actually, like, I was speaking about work today, and no one in my office gives the slightest fuck about RoboCop, which is bizarre.
And wrong.
And wrong. And I'm sitting, I was talking about it, I'm like, you just don't understand. I was expecting it to be really bad. I was expecting to go in there and come out and have all that cynicism that's been kind of building up in me for 2 years, completely validated. And I come out and I thought for a second it would make me stop questioning remakes and reboots and all the rest and all the things that usually get my back up, but that's not worked, because I was reading today that there is Joel Schumacher's going to be doing a three series prequel to Escape from New York, and I was like, fuck's sake,
no, that'll be awful.
If the RoboCop remake's really good, I'm still going to bitch and moan if someone remakes something that I like. So,
how do you do a prequel to Escape from New York? I mean, it needs to be Snake Plissken.
I'm assuming
it needs to be RoboCop, didn't we?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to go into how, like, some of Snake's adventures. I don't know. It's going to be shit. Until I go and see it and I like it, and then I'll be back on here talking about it.
Yep, most likely.
So, Duncan, thank you very much indeed for joining us to discuss RoboCop. It's been real.
Thank you very much for having these back on.
People can listen to your voice if they've enjoyed your insightful comments. People can listen to you on TPUTS, Teaputs, the podcast Under the Stairs. And you're also a member of the League of Extraordinary Podcasts, is that correct?
I'm indeed a proud member.
Very good, very good.
I'm an upstanding member.
In good standing, absolutely. So, Duncan, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and we'll get you back in a couple of months for the Warriors remake. Is that okay?
What? I thought that was so cancelled.
Oh, okay.
I thought that I'd went under the radar there. I was a bit...
Right, okay.
Or the Old Boy remake.
Oh, hi.
Yep.
Thanks very much for having me on, guys. It's been brilliant.
That's awesome.
And we'll be back after this. Boom.
The podcast which you're about to listen to is an account of the viewing experiences which befell two Scottish men. It is all the more tragic in that they were young and enthusiastic. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to have watched as much of the mad and macabre movies they did. For them, a friendship and shared interest in horror movies became a nightmare. The events of their viewing were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre podcasts in the annals of podcast history. The Podcast Under the Stairs. The Podcast Under the Stairs can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com or on iTunes.
Okay, guys, and we're back. So that was another episode of Gillian Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. You made it. That was the test. You passed.
unless you took the red pill.
Unless you took the red pill, you failed if you took the red pill. But thankfully, you'll be in a higher state of consciousness by now. And the fact of whether you pass or fail an arbitrary test that's been assigned to you by a horror podcast that you occasionally listen to isn't really going to be that much an issue.
I was just thinking that I hate it when I see people posting on Facebook that they're going to take the red pill. I should just go through and delete all of them. Just keep the people that are going to take the blue pill.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I hope that doesn't make me seem heartless.
That was one of those conversations where you kind of get to see and say the soul of someone and you just decide, nope.
Nope, not interested.
Nope, don't agree with you one bit about that. Goodbye.
Yeah, easy decisions are.
Yeah, exactly.
Are easy.
Exactly. Gil, in true Jamie Jenkins style, I've forgot that I watched something that is a groundbreaking significance, and
wait,
I'm going to mention
you were just
going
to laugh a lot.
No, I'm going to mention it at the last kick of the podcast. I also watched the Seinfeld reunion.
The Seinfeld reunion.
I nearly died, dude. 6 minutes of George and Jerry and Newman and comedians and cars getting coffee and a wee skit. And man, I was so happy. It was great. It was just one of those things where I was just so delighted to see it. I couldn't believe it when I saw it going up. And I was just like, man...
That's
great.
That's a euphemism.
It's been a stressful year, Gil. I'll be the first to admit.
Has it been hard?
Or... It has. The Mango is the if any Seinfeld fans are listening, then you know that Mango is the fruit of love. So yeah, that was great to see that. So that was awesome. And also a Bob Dylan commercial where he went to bat for the city of Detroit, much like RoboCop.
What about the other Bob Dylan?
There's some connections. What about the other Bob Dylan? Oh, well, he did Victoria's Secret back in the early 2000s, didn't he?
Yeah, but also during the Super Bowl, Bob Dylan earned money from 3 different commercials.
Oh yeah, I heard that. That's right, because it was like $5 million he got for doing that. That commercial.
Did he sell out?
No, yeah. Absolutely not.
I like to think he was trying to buy back in.
Absolutely not. Bob Dylan's not some left wing. As much as we would like him to be some kind of left wing visionary, Bob Dylan's Bob Dylan. It's impossible to put him into a wee box.
Well.
Unless it's a wee box, it's the greatest songwriter of all time. That's
I was thinking unless it was an un. Just a wee
not
box.
Not yet. We've got a wee bit of time yet.
Are you sure?
Enjoy him while we've got him. That's what I say.
But also, since you let me down for the cinema this week, I've now preemptively let you down for the cinema.
How so?
Because we were supposed to be going to see Ty West chatting a lot of shite.
Oh yeah, films. Absolutely, absolutely.
That's the way I'm thinking about it now. You know, because I was looking forward to going and hearing what he's got to say, but now I'm just imagining that he's just going to be chatting a lot of shite, and he's not even showing his new film. And you'll be going to that still, won't you?
I'll be going with a small contingent of bodacious individuals.
I will be next door.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Ty West. He's a director who I hugely respect, as much as the short films I wasn't so keen on. I absolutely loved The Innkeepers and House of the Devil, so I'm really excited. And I'm really excited about seeing The Sacrament as well. But Gil, more importantly, you instead of going to see Ty West, you are going to see...
Terry fucking Gilliam!
Wow, so Terry Gilliam is doing a question and answer session at the GFT, and Gil's managed to get a ticket for that. And it also includes a screening for his latest film, is that right?
It's not just a screening, it's the UK premiere.
UK premiere, fantastic.
Of Zero Theorem.
Wow.
Which does look really good.
That would be very cool, man. Very cool.
And it was £6.50.
Very good.
Like you can't really like knock that back. £6.50 to go and see Terry Gilliam and his new film.
That's amazing. It's really good, man.
It'll
really
make
good.
Up for the fact that I will never be able to afford to go and see the Monty Python reunion.
Yeah, of course. That's the thing. These,
unless, of course, I sidle up to him in a sexy fashion.
Absolutely.
Say, hey, baby. Who could resist these beardy, not quite as hairy as they used to be looks?
Who indeed? Who indeed?
But it does also mean that we all get to have a night out at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So that'll be really good.
We will all be meeting up beforehand in the bar to go, absolutely. Oh my god, I'm going to see Terry Gilliam. Or are you going to see Ty West?
No.
The inventor of the West. See, you thought I was going to say Ty there, didn't you?
Oh, that really shocked me with that. Yeah. That was great. I was very impressed.
So, yeah, that's our plans. And we have also decided what films we will be covering on the next show.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to tell everyone?
Well, I can tell you one of them. we've not decided the second one, have we? Unless you have.
Bram Stoker's.
Yeah, cool. Good idea. The first.
That just came to me.
Yeah, no, great suggestion. The first film that we're going to be covering is Bela Lugosi's and Todd Browning's immortal masterpiece, Dracula. And we'll also be looking at the Spanish language version of Dracula that was filmed at the same time. We'll be looking at the additional features. As Gil mentioned in the previous section, we've decided to do every week to look through each of the Universal Monsters, the Blu-ray box set, each of the discs, each of the films, and look at the supplementary features.
And the supplemental ones as well.
And supplemental features, and give you a background to what we think of those and kind of get a feel for those. So it's something that we've not really done before. We never really went into that kind of level of depth, but I think it's a great idea, and I'm really looking forward to it. So well done, Gil, for thinking of that one on the spot.
Well, I am a documentary fan.
I know, I'm very impressed, and yeah, it's a good excuse to get into these documentaries and really
get deep down in their guts.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the second film that you've just announced is Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes, which may change. We never know. It's probably going
to
be
change.
Probably going to be Bram Stoker's. Could be Dracula 2000. Could be
Nosferatu, man.
We haven't even done Nosferatu, but I think
we're better going later, to be honest. Myself and Gil, Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast, are very proud members of the League of Extraordinary Podcasts. You can find us on Facebook by searching for League of Extraordinary Podcasts. And we're very proud to announce that we're going to be having an event on Saturday, the 22nd of February. And that's a that's a watch-along event where we're going to be watching the film Shadow of Death by Gav Chucky Steele.
Which we have previously reviewed as well.
Absolutely.
Back in the day.
And that's going to be at 11:30 p.m. GMT. It's going to be 6:30 p.m. EST and 5:30 p.m. CST. So it would be really great if you could be involved by liking the League of Extraordinary Podcasts Facebook page, and that's where the discussion will take place. We're going to have a watch along through a website called Watch Together, and it's going to be a really great experience to get to know other podcasts and other listeners. So, as
and
we
that
said before,
website has a chat feature as well.
Absolutely. So, as I say, it's a great opportunity, and hopefully you'll join us for that. So that's Saturday, the 22nd of February. There's an event on Facebook, and we'd appreciate it if you'd join us. Okay, so with that being said, guys, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Bodacious Horror, and Gil is at
Gil Rokitansky.
Absolutely, and everything else, go to www.bodacioushorror.co.uk. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Bye. Whatever, bye. But are you not gone yet? No, you hang up.
Adam, do you read me over? I am going down a shop to buy 10 fags. Do you need a drink or some crisps? You fucking can't go down the shop like that, man. You got a fucking tinfoil wrapped around your head.
It's not tinfoil. It's my new skin. I am a robot. I have interfaced with my spectrum. Behold.
You fucking nuts, man. Stop talking like that.
What do you mean? It is my normal voice. My computer integrated voice circuit is making me speak like this.
Stop talking like that, you fucking belly.
I'm getting a bit worried now. I think we might.
I am a robot. I am a robot.
Fucking inject him, man. Inject him. Fucking cut it down. Oh, fucking hell.
Pinatone Spectrum, Pac-Man Commodore, ZX81, Donkey Kong, fucking high score. Push it to the limit, couldn't push it anymore. Wanna be a fucking robot after smoking lungs I draw. For the speaking spell, stuck it to my chest. I wrap some fucking tinfoil to my head and to my vest. Walking down the street, my next door neighbor's not impressed. I'm a robot, I'm buying 10 facts, it's my quest.
Eggs, he's gone too far, he thinks he's Robocop. He's covered in tinfoil and's got matching metal socks. We tried to sedate him, but he fucking escaped. The man robot myth starts to escalate. He tries to sell himself, standing in curries, but if the beasts turn up, he runs in a fucking hurry. He tries to plug himself in the mains with his knob, and when he's fully recharged, he goes out on the run.
Half man, half machine, what does it mean? What does it mean? Half man, half machine, what does it mean? What does it mean?
Being a robot in my digital domain. Enter my world, feel my pain. I'm not like other people you might see or you might know. I made love to a BBC micro. Touched it on the disk drive, the monitor got hot. I knew from then I was a motherfucking robot. Bill Gates from Microsoft, Stephen Hawking's voice, I'm fucking Lara Croft. I built a lab, secret in my loft. I built a special costume that would help me to jack off. I sat there, in front of the screen. For many years, this would be my wet dream. Now I've reached it, I'm finally there. Like Terminator being filmed in Aberdare. So alone, when people stop and stare. Like C-3PO, but with pubes and hair.
Robot lab.
Robot.
Robotic ray dancing.
Robot.
The doctor's name of the nut, they said he was an egg case. Cause he sticks sprayed silver egg cans on his face. Sucking off antennas and trying to fuck the fridge and burn his pubic wig with a high voltage.
I jams as robots. Mine's primes, directives, is twos, goes to the shops. And buys tens facts, dues, who's cons, pubes.
He wants to buy 10 facts, his destination is the shop. A tinfoil mask who's done a hat like Robocop. If you ask him, then he'll do a body pop. Like Terminator, yet he just won't stop. Put electric cable down through the eye of his cock. Plugged it in the wall and gave himself a big shock. The reason that he did it wasn't to give himself pain. Watching Terminator over again and again.
Fuck man, get fucking restrain him man, get a fucking stirrup.
Fucking get him down man, inject him man, get him down. He's fucking nuts man, he's losing it.
Help me man, get him fucking.
Half man, half machine, what does it mean? What does it mean? Half man, half machine, what does it mean? What does it mean? Half man, half machine, what does it mean? What does it mean? Half man, half machine, what does it mean? What does it mean?
You still a fucking robot then, Span?
No, not anymore.
You fucking look, fucking sound like one as well.
I am not a robot, I can assure you, thank you.
I fucking think you are.